Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Jokum. Matt and Jess are joining me. Guys, how are we doing tonight?
Good.
Pretty good.
Awesome. Hope everybody is ready for a fun episode of news and updates as we can finally start to wind down the silly season before the season gets going here, or at least the preseason. But first, a shout out to Mr. Faux Will Power for our new logo rebrand. If you haven't seen it by now, it's on all of our social media and our website and all the podcast apps. And it'll be on our new t-shirts that will be printed hopefully before the season starts. With that, we're going to jump right into the news here and get this episode on a roll. So I'll turn it over to Matt.
Hey, Jess, did you hear that? We're getting new t-shirts. It's weird. I didn't know that. Did you know that?
I did not.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. I have to keep the tradition going.
Thanks for recommending to us, Mike. That's awesome, though. Yeah, and thanks, Mr. Fowell. The logos are super sleek and super nice, and we really appreciate that and the effort you put into that. So, like Mike said, just go check out our social media for those new logos, and we really appreciate it. Biggest topic of the week, biggest news story of the week was Aero Electronics, and they have stepped up big time in the support of Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports to the point where it's now called Aero Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports. So they've bought the titles to be the named sponsor on the team. And then along with that, they are actually sponsoring all three entries for Schmidt, the full-time drivers of James Hinchcliffe and Marcus Ericsson, the rookie. And then when he's back, Robert Wickens will be also in an Aero car based on what they showed the media when they did the unveiling. It's fantastic news. Aero's been with Schmidt since 2013, has been a primary sponsor on the car since 2015. They've just been amazing. Their activation is fantastic. This could potentially now have a big effect on the Schmidt team. First of all, they no longer have to look for sponsors. They don't really have to worry about going around and looking door to door and whatnot for sponsors. They can just focus on building a quality team. They'll have more money to invest, and it should put them in the ballpark, hopefully, with Ganassi, Penske, and Andretti for this upcoming season and years to come. So, Jess, what are your thoughts about the announcement, and what do you think is going to happen to the Schmidt team for this year and the future?
I'm really excited. I think I've said it a million times before, having more sponsors come on board is never a bad thing. And can I just say, like, as kind of a little side note, the fact that we're talking about when Robert Wickens comes back instead of if he comes back is just mind-boggling amazing. So really excited for that. Really excited to see what they can do for the year. And I think it's a really good pairing as far as Aero goes with Sam and Robert both being on the team. It's perfect.
Yeah, I am just going to echo what Jess said. You know, when I tuned in for the announcement last week, I didn't really know what to expect other than, okay, they're going to unveil the liveries and that's that. And then all of a sudden they said, oh yeah, we bought into the team, which is awesome. Anytime you get a sponsor buying into a team like that, it doesn't happen very, very often at all. Maybe only a few times that I could even remember. So great for them. I guess the only thing I wish is that, you know, the second car, in this case Ericsson, maybe wasn't the exact same scheme or livery as James Hinchcliffe. I know there's a few minor differences, but I was almost hoping they would do like a reverse of the gold and black if they're trying to keep the gold and black. But I digress, and that's not really all that important in the grand scheme of things. Great to see, and obviously, gives you goosebumps the entire time, and extra goosebumps when you see Robert Wickens there and talking very positively about everything.
Yeah, and to kind of on top of that, maybe they should just do what Team Cool Green did back in the day, and on Dario's car, they just throw like an orange sticker on the nose and call it good. Because their cars were identical too. So maybe they should just throw an orange little sticker on Ericsson's nose and call it a day. But yeah, as far as the whole announcement, yeah, it's fantastic. I think it's great for the team. I think it's great for Sam Schmidt, who's put a lot of effort into building this team very gradually over the years. And yes, and as far as what Jess said, until Robert Wickens comes out and says that he's not driving anymore, it's going to be when he returns, not an if in my book. So I'm really looking forward to that day where he can return. Maybe we'll just do a quick yes, no. Mike, do you see Hinch ending up beating any of the Penske drivers in the championship in 2019 now that they should be a quote unquote better team?
Wow, that's a tough one to be put on the spot this early in the episode.
Good thing it's a yes, no answer, right?
I am going to go with no, but he's going to give them a very strong fight.
Jess?
Just for the sake of argument, because, you know, I can never agree with him, I'm going to say yes.
I will also say yes. And the reason I say yes is because I'm not quite sold on Simon Pagenaud and these new cars. So I guess we'll have to wait and see if he has a much better 2019. But we'll move into our next segment here, which also is about Robert Wickens. And it's the video that he just shared on his social media. It's what he had as his caption, saying that his right leg is now walking unassisted. He's been using, and I'm not a physical therapist expert, but he's been using this machine to kind of help his legs moves to regenerate some of the muscles and tissues and whatnot to get those neurons firing. And the right one apparently is now walking unassisted, which is fantastic news. And it just shows the progress is there. It's building up, and says the left leg still needs some work, but it's definitely sounding better and better every week. He made sure to clear up the fact that even though he was at the unveiling of the cars, that he does not know if he'll be racing in 2019, which would be a bummer, but it would also be understandable, and this is going to take a long time to recover. But I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on what we continue to see for his recovery on social media. If Mike, you want to go first?
Yeah, great to see. You know, I liked the, you know, the post he posted. I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, where after his rehab, you know, just from getting his legs up and moving, they are, you know, that tired shaking that they're doing, which you know may seem like a bad thing to people, you know, regular people, but for him, you know, just that movement that he's getting is awesome. And the fact we're talking about one of his legs completely, you know, unassisted walking, and his other, you know, progressing only, I don't know, 5 months plus after his accident, really blows my mind and makes me very, very happy. So, you know, great to see his recovery. And I think, yeah, probably won't be racing in 2019. I don't know, you know, what his timeline is, but you know, it's just great to see the progress.
I don't know if I agree with the probably won't be racing in 2019. I'm gonna keep hope alive here. There's so much technology that can be put in the cars to assist drivers who have physical issues, so I can't say that we won't see him. I mean, it may not be, you know, till the last couple of races, but it's amazing to me how far he's come already. And I just kind of clap my hands every time I see a new video. So I'm very excited for it.
For sure. Yeah. I think it's going to be great to see. Right after it was kind of announced that he was okay, I had tweeted out that it was a minor setback for a major comeback, and it's going to be something that we're all going to just celebrate once he's back on the track. So keep it up, Robert. You know, we're still wishing you well, and thank you so much for all the social media posts, including the comedic ones where he got a new Apple Watch, and apparently he got a notification that he needed to stand up and move around a little more, and he tweeted that and with a sense of humor. So that was pretty funny to watch. Next up, continuing to branch out internationally, it seems like IndyCar is making more headways internationally than in years past. Three new TV deals were confirmed. Actually, I'm sorry, two new TV deals were confirmed within the last week since our last episode. Is DAZN, is that like a word or an acronym? I'm not sure how that works. Maybe Mike's cheating for me on this one.
I'm looking that up right now. Keep talking.
All right. Well, DAZN, whatever that is, if it's Dazen, or DAZN. It's a streaming service in Spain, has picked up the rights to the IndyCar series. I believe that was rumored a couple weeks ago, we had touched on, but now it's official. And then actually today, Wednesday, The Nordic Entertainment Group also picked up the IndyCar rights to broadcast the races in Sweden, Norway, Denmark, and Finland, which does make a lot of sense given that there are two prominent Swedish drivers in the upcoming season with Felix Rosenqvist and Marcus Ericsson. And then finally, the Canadian deal is still currently under negotiation. I do believe it's still with Sportsnet. I'm not sure if they're talking about this year or just a long-term extension for IndyCar coverage. What I read from Miller's Mailbag and a couple other sources was that it was kind of vague sounding, so I don't know what's going on there. But to all of our friends north of the border, do not fear. Sounds like you guys should be in good hands. Mike, do we got an answer on this?
A short story, no. Long story, kind of. So they're a streaming service. It looks like they have, you can watch on your TV, on your phone or your tablet, your computer or your gaming console. So this is for the Spanish location. They're actually headquartered in the U.S. And it just says DAZN Group. So I think it's actually a word, Dijon, kind of like Dijon mustard. Ha, ha, ha.
what was that?
So that's how that's that Dijon, maybe.
Oh, I get you. I'm like, where does Dijon have to come in?
I'm reading the German pronunciation on Wikipedia right now.
Got it. Oh, there we go.
So it looks like they're all over the world, a pretty big OTT streaming provider. They do the NFL in Canada. They work with Bell Media for that. They do Champions League in Europe, soccer, and Major League Soccer, Premier League Soccer. So they're all over the place. They're doing a lot of stuff. So good for good for them to get in on the IndyCar. I think Alonso had something to do with that, if I'm not mistaken. I think we talked about that like 6 weeks ago or so. So cool to see, and should be good for all the Spanish fans.
Yeah, and it's actually an appealing offer. You know, I would have probably subscribed to that this year had Scott Goodyear still been a commentator with the IndyCar team. I would rather listen to it in Spanish than listen to Goodyear. Jess, any thoughts about Dijon and all the other international deals we got going on here?
I'm curious, and maybe you guys know, do they already have a deal for Japan? Because if not, I feel like that has got to be in the pipeline with the new title sponsor.
I'm not sure, because you see those clips of Takumi Sato winning the Indy 500 and the Japanese commentators going crazy. I'm not sure if that's a radio affiliation or if they're just kind of piggybacking off of ABC. So I guess we could look into that a little further, but I don't know off the top of my head.
I just feel like, you know, that would be just kind of a natural tie-in. But it's good to see, IndyCar expanding kind of all over. It's nice to see that, the fan base is obviously growing, or the TV stations or streaming sites wouldn't be picking them up. So it's really good, positive news.
Perfect. Mike, we'll toss it to you.
All right. Our first round of Patreon shout-outs. And again, for those who are interested, there's special content going up there every month. It's patreon.com/pitlaneparlay. So thank you to Mr. Stephen King, blogger man, Mr. Mike Knapp, and Michael Goodyear. And we'll do one more, Matt Gruenholz. Thank you to all of them who have been longtime subscribers since we started the Patreon.
Wait.
And Mr. Stephen King isn't last.
Yes. I changed up the order this week.
There you go. Not the author is first. We like it. Moving on. IndyCar made a couple announcements this week that were caught a lot of people's attention about changing some aerodynamics with the cars at Texas, Pocono, and Indianapolis in regards to what teams can do to the rear wings and what teams can do to the front wings. This is in the hopes to enhance the racing at those tracks. If we're going to be honest, Pocono, I think Mike voted, was the worst race last year, and I think people agreed.
Yes.
Indianapolis had its moments. However, if it wasn't for some restarts and or Alexander Rossi, I'm not sure that the race would have been that memorable. Texas was pretty good. A lot of good moments there. But then the whole goal is here is to, just help the racing a little bit. It gives teams a little more freedom. I believe a lot of team engineers and whatnot were asking for something in the offseason to be done. So that's good that, you know, Jay Fry was listening and the aerodynamic department was listening there. And then the other news that came out was more engine boosts at Iowa and Gateway will be available to the team. It went up by 10 boost units. I'm sorry, I'm not very knowledgeable in that area, and I don't know what boost is measured in, but it went up by 10 something to bring it to the same level as street and road courses. So the goal there is also to improve racing and to give guys a little bit more oomph out of the corners. Jess, I don't know if you have any thoughts on any of that news, or do you think it's a good step? Anything like that?
Isn't it pounds per square inch what it's measured in? Anywho.
I thought it was like KPH. I don't know what the K stands for.
I think Jess is correct.
Oh, maybe I'm wrong. Yeah. Sorry.
No, you're good. I think we talked about the, here's just not a good word. We'll call it the mediocre racing at some of the ovals last year. We've talked about it several times on here. I won't say it was necessarily bad, but it wasn't great either. So I think it's a good move. I hope that it's what is needed. I hope it doesn't go backwards. So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens this year.
And yes, it is pounds per square inch, like Jess said. I did my handy Google search there. And filling, you know, everybody in on the aero side, I think, is awesome. You know, they're adding the gurney flaps, which is just that little, almost like a small tab on the front wing or rear wing. And they don't have to run it on both sides of the wing. They could run it on one side, depending on, you know, what they need. And I think it's definitely the right move, you know, giving them not just, listen, here's one gurney flap, use it if you want. There's three different levels depending on how much downforce you need. So great move there. And the power boost, especially after Will Power called for it, I think after Gateway last year, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm sure, you know, the Will Power and whatnot is correct. So anybody else who wanted that, and it's definitely a good step in the right direction until we get to the, you know, new engine regulations in 2021, if I'm not mistaken.
For sure. Yeah. At the end of the day, I think I have my full trust in the IndyCar department when it comes to making and executing decisions like this, because they've been very good since Jay Fry's taken over at getting these types of situations right. So we'll give them the benefit of the doubt, and I'm really looking forward to the season a little more now. One thing to touch on, obviously the big story last week was NTT joining the IndyCar series as the title sponsor. It said multi-year deal. We didn't really get a specification on what that was. But another thing that was curious was the monetary value of what they were pumping into IndyCar. I know at one point Mark Miles said he wanted somewhere between $15 to $25 million a year. After I stopped laughing after 5 minutes, I got to my senses and thought that's going to be pretty hard to obtain. But according to various reports out there, apparently NTT is going to be paying roughly the same as Verizon, which I think is actually a pretty big win for IndyCar, because they actually negotiated a pretty strong deal with Verizon. I think it was $10 million annually for 5 years guaranteed with a maximum of 10. Yes. So that's good. Mike, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, so just to, you know, for those who don't know, the Verizon deal was negotiated. It was a $6 million a year flat, and then $4 million dedicated to you know, promotional type stuff and whatnot. And obviously we kind of saw that Verizon didn't do a lot of that in the last year or two of their agreement. So I would guess that NTT, I don't know if they have the same structure or if it's just a flat 10 million or how it's broken down, but I think we will see much more in the engagement category from them than we saw in Verizon the last, you know, definitely in the last season and a half or so. So great to see. I was worried that they weren't going to be able to match what Verizon was paying just based on the motorsports landscape and, you know, Monster Energy and NASCAR. I don't think they got, you know, close to what they got before for Sprint. So, you know, great. I think that's great for IndyCar.
Jess?
Yeah. Like you said, I think they're going to do better at fan engagement. I mean, I feel like, and I may be wrong, but I feel like just their social media team has picked up the pace in the last week or so. I feel like I see a lot more posts, a lot more what's going on behind the scenes. You know, their typical is it May yet posts, all that. So I feel like they're already kind of coming out of the gate doing a good job. And obviously, you know, getting a good paycheck from them is, again, only going to help IndyCar. I feel like they just keep having everything go the right way to keep growing the sport.
Yes, well said. Moving on, for those who don't know, the Rolex 24 at Daytona is this weekend. Starts on Saturday, and obviously it ends on Sunday. A lot of IndyCar representation that is going to be in that race. For those who don't follow us on Twitter, we did tweet out a list. I sadly did forget to include Ben Hanley, so that's my fault. He is definitely an active IndyCar driver. Still getting used to that. Not really a common association I associate with IndyCar, but I better start getting used to it. So for those who don't know, active IndyCar drivers who have deals signed in 2019 in the field include Alexander Rossi, Colton Herta, Fernando Alonso, Elio Castroneves, Scott Dixon, Sebastian Bourdais, Simon Pagenaud, and Ben Hanley. A couple notable former IndyCar drivers who are in the field include AJ Allmendinger, Christian Fittipaldi, who I believe it's his last race ever. I think
you're right. Yeah,
I think he's retiring after that race, so that's a bummer. What a great driver and great career he had. Juan Montoya, Catherine Legg, Mike Conway, Ryan Briscoe, Simona Di Silvestro, who we haven't seen in the American landscape too often recently, and Townsend Bell. So definitely some really good representation in the IndyCar side of things over at the Rolex 24. I don't know if you guys have read up too much on what to expect or anything. Mike, how can fans at home watch the race if they want?
Yeah, I'm definitely excited to watch. I will be watching most of it, although I don't think I will be able to stay up through the night. I know people have given me grief for that in years past, but I tried last year and made it until 2 a.m. But you can watch it. The start of the... So, when this episode is released, there will be a IMSA Michelin Pilot Challenge BMW Endurance race Friday, 12:05 p.m. Eastern on IMSA.tv. And then Saturday when the race starts, I think the actual race start is 2 p.m. It's on NBCSN for the entire night, or the entire day, with the exception of a couple hours where it shifts to somewhere else. I believe the NBC Sports app will also have coverage. Yeah, 5 to 9 p.m. looks like it's on the NBC Sports app only, and then the rest is on NBCSN. So I think NBCSN has either 19 or 20 out of the 24 hours of the race.
Jess, anything to look forward to or any thoughts on it?
Well, since that's just right up the road for me, I'm still torn about whether to drive over for a couple hours or not. It's a good race. If you've never watched it, I've been a few times for the whole 24, and it's definitely an intense experience to be there for the whole thing. But it's definitely worth watching. You know, there's always a lot of drama. Obviously, the cars sometimes just don't make it. So there's attrition. It's got all of the aspects of a good race. I mean, it's just good racing.
And how could I forget to touch on Alex Zanardi being in the field as well? So that's kind of what I'm looking forward to, is I'll be rooting for those BMWs that Bobby Rahal owns, mainly because of Alex Zanardi and then my good buddy, Connor DeFilippis, in the other car. So really looking forward to that. But yeah, just basically anybody associated with or currently in IndyCar has got my vote, except maybe Sebastian Saavedra. So we'll see how that goes. And if you guys have any good stories, or if you stay up all night, let us know, and maybe we'll give you a shout in the next episode. I forgot to mention Zanardi, though. I don't know if you guys had any thoughts on Zanardi jumping back in the wheel.
Super impressive.
Yeah, have you seen the video where he's switching out? Like, it's amazing to watch him do that. It's, I mean, you know, the only word really that can be used to describe him as hero.
Yeah, I mean, I can barely tie my shoes sometimes. So to see him kind of do that is amazing. And it just shows just how good of an athlete that guy is. And
when you see something like that and you see Robert Wickens working his butt off, and then I have trouble getting up to go to the gym, it really just, I realize I have no excuses for not going.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Moving on. So there was I think it was last weekend, was the Race of Champions, the once annual event that hosts drivers of various countries. And it's kind of hard to describe if you haven't seen it on TV. That's basically two drivers go head to head in similar cars, and they have to do like one lap of the same circuit, and whoever gets back to the finish line first obviously wins. There was some good IndyCar representation there. Joseph Newgarden was there. Ryan Hunter-Reay was there. Former IndyCar driver Esteban Gutierrez was there. Elio Castroneves, who has never won a championship, was at the Race of Champions. That was kind of surprising to me. But I think the biggest one we wanted to touch on was the fact that Pato O'Ward was there. And so this, the vocation for this race was in Mexico, and the Mexican fans were all over Pato all weekend. He was definitely a crowd favorite. Based on what I saw, it sounded like he did very well as far as results go. So that's good to see. And I think it just kind of backs up the fact that this dude is very talented. So that's going to be something to keep our eye on. And it was really good to see all those Twitter updates. Mike, I know you kind of looked into the Race Champions a little bit. Did you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I watched some highlight videos, and fortunately I didn't watch any of it live. I don't even know if you could watch it live, but I did see all of Pato's social media updates, and he was definitely the most popular guy there all weekend. So that's pretty much all I have on that. And I don't want to spoil too much for the rest of the episode for your thoughts on that. So I'll just keep my mouth shut for now.
Jess, anything?
I mean, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. I can't wait to see him this season after watching. I just watched the highlights also. I didn't watch the whole thing, but man, he was good. So I can't wait to see him.
What about the esports gamer that beat Lucas Degrassi? Did you guys see that on social media?
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Although I don't know if you saw The Futurist wrote an article that I know we talked about, and you fooled me pretty good, making fun of me a little bit. But they quoted Ryan Hunter-Reay as a 3-time Indianapolis 500 champ. And I'm sure Ryan wishes that, but unfortunately they didn't really do their fact checking. But pretty cool that, you know, a sim racer went up and beat a professional racer. I think that goes to show that, you know, sim racing and sim racing training for drivers is definitely going to become more and more important.
Yeah, guys, Mike couldn't detect my sarcasm when I tried to convince him that Ryan Hunter-Reay had won 3 Indianapolis 500s. He thought I was serious. So that was the highlight of my week last week. But yeah, sim racing is kind of an interesting deal. You know, the amount of money these guys get is insane. You should see some of the net worths of some of these guys who play these games, and guys and girls, and it's pretty crazy. But speaking of net worth, did you guys know that Danica Patrick has a net worth of $60 million?
Does she really?
I didn't know that. Do you guys know that?
Interesting.
That is a couple dollars.
Yes, I'm sure if you asked nicely, she would give you some. I don't know. I feel like she would just gladly just give you a check for $75,000 if you asked nicely.
I don't.
Okay. All right, well...
All you have to do is go to a Packers game, and I'm sure she'll be there.
Yeah, she probably will be. And then Packers fans can blame her for the Packers sucking like they did in social media last year. Moving on. Jess, I think it's your chance to stump the host.
Okay. So I gave you the answer earlier. This is not IndyCar related, so I'm sorry. This is related to my pitfall. So... I'm just setting myself up mostly. It really has nothing to do with you guys. But I could actually make it with what your little fact was too. So we could do it like a two-way thing. Okay, so Dale Earnhardt Jr., you know, he had a pretty long career in NASCAR. And he raced 631 times over his career in NASCAR. Can you guys tell me how many times he won and what his earnings were. And actually, we might get an and or. How about that? An and or. And not cheating.
So he raced 631 races, you said, correct?
Yes.
I'm going to say he I'm going to say he won 20 times and his career earnings were $110 million.
Good Lord.
Okay.
Is that a thing?
I don't know.
Are we talking just
that's
like
a lot of money?
Like, are we just talking from like he finishes a race and gets $50,000 for finishing 32nd or whatever? Or are we talking like in
what his career earnings were?
All right. Well, I think he won 27 times, which might be generous. And his career earnings were $74 million.
Okay. So you definitely get the wins. And by the way, to preface this for those of you at home who are Googling this right now, I am talking strictly Cup Series. I should have said that beforehand, but strictly Cup Series. He won, 26 times.
Who?
But Mike was closer on the earnings. He earned $95,608,982.
Dale, if you're listening, we generously accept donations.
I need to get
I would like to become a NASCAR driver.
I was going to say, I need to get out of podcasting and get into NASCAR. Holy Lord, are you kidding? $95 million for 600 something? How many, what's the math on that? Like,
I don't even know. And that, honestly, that stat is missing 2 years of earnings. So it would probably be well over.
That is $150,554.68 per race.
Not a bad day's work. We're not even counting endorsements because I know Mountain Dew probably gave him King's Ransom for all those years. Good Lord.
Yeah, this information, by the way, is coming from racingreference.info. So, you know, it might not necessarily be 100% accurate, but I'm sure they're very close. And like I said, it is missing 2 years, but holy crap, that is a lot of money.
Yeah, that's fair. Good stump. I think you stumped me on one and Mike on the other. So I guess we'll count both for wins on that one. Mike,
go ahead. Yeah, so our second round of Patreon shout-outs. Thank you again, Jason Camps, our buddy George, Colin Taylor, and last but not least, the aforementioned Packers fan, Mr. David Lighting. Thank you guys again. We should have some new content up there soon in the near future.
Did someone say David Lighting?
I did.
Oh, well, I got a fan question from David Lighting to ask both of you guys. So thanks for submitting that question, David. The question is, who is your guys' – and we're doing a season preview in a couple weeks anyways, but we'll kick it off and give you guys a little tease of what's going to happen here. But Jess and Mike, who is your guys' dark horse to have the biggest letdown season of 2019?
Wow.
And just because Mike so much loved being on the spot earlier, he can go first.
Biggest dark horse to be a letdown is the question. Let's see here. I am going to say, I'm looking at all of the drivers who are racing this year right now. Let down. I'm going to go with Ryan Hunter-Reay.
Ooh, elaborate.
I have no reasoning other than maybe he's, he's getting a little older and maybe he's thinking about, you know, what life after racing is with, you know, now a fourth kid on the way, I think. So that's my pick.
Jess.
Okay. I don't know about Ryan Hunter-Reay this year. He's not going to be my pick, but he's got kind of a good point there. I think my pick is going to be, yeah, I know, right? That's like the only time you're ever going to say that. So let me think here. I think that I'm going to have to say, and I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of crap for it, is probably going to be Joseph Newgarden.
Ouch.
Yeah, I feel like he had a couple of, you know, really good seasons, and like, not to sound crazy or anything, but I feel like he's going to have a rough year this year. Just kind of, you know, I guess the
gut feeling.
Odds are in the favor. Yeah, I guess the odds are in the favor because he's had a lot of really good things going on. So I feel like maybe he's going to have an off year. He's got a lot going on in his personal life also, you know, getting engaged and everything. So maybe it just won't be his best season.
All right. Well, I disagree with both of you. I think I have them slated to both finish in the top five in the championship. So fingers crossed on that one. I'm actually going to go with someone we've talked about at the beginning of the episode in James Hinchcliffe.
Wow.
I think if you look at, and this is based off my driver's rating system, it's almost like Hinch has never improved as he's started. He's always just been consistently good, but he's never been consistent enough to mount a really good championship effort, whether it's his fault or not his fault. But one thing we haven't touched on last year was that second Schmidt car, ever since it came in 2013, has always been garbage. And then all of a sudden, Robert Wickens comes in and just torches everybody every weekend as far as just raw pace in his first session, including Hinch. You know, he made Hinch look pretty bad in a couple race weekends as far as just pace. And I don't know. I just think, like, to me, Hinch has had an underwhelming couple of seasons. I think he has two or three really good races a year, but then a couple other races that are just disasters. And now with this added pressure of Aero coming up and making the team financially stable and having more backing, he's going to be expected to put up a pretty solid championship effort. And I just don't know if it's going to happen. So I think Hinch may be a letdown by season's end. And of course I said Wickens wasn't going to be that great either. So who knows? I mean, I'm usually wrong at this kind of stuff, but, thanks for submitting the question, David. We're definitely going to have a preview episode before the season starts. We're going to kind of dive into this stuff a little deeper.
I have one question for you, Matt.
Yeah.
So at the beginning of our episode in the Will Hinchcliffe challenge the, you know, Penske cars, you said yes.
That doesn't mean that he's not going to beat Pagenaud. I mean, I think...
Okay, right. I see what you're saying.
If Hinch finishes eighth in the championship, I still think that's going to be pretty underwhelming. Right. I don't think he'll hold a candle to Power Newgarden, in my opinion.
Okay. I like it.
That's just kind of where I'm coming from. So I guess, yeah, for me, now where Schmidt is, I'm expecting like a top five from Hinch in the championship. Do I think he's going to get that? Unfortunately, not.
Makes sense.
So that's where I'm coming from. But yeah, you know, good debate. Good. Thanks
yeah,
for
great, posting. Great question.
Great question, David. We love it. We're going to go a little lightning round here on some of the silly season news that we got this week. And then we'll kind of get some collective thoughts afterwards from Mike and Jess. First up, Carlin finally announced something. I believe Jess was getting, I don't want to say impatient, but concerned last week with Carlin not announcing anything. It is Chilton going to be full-time, and then Charlie Kimball will be part-time. Chilton will have that Gallagher sponsorship. No news on RC Enerson or anybody else in that second full-time ride quite yet, so we'll just have to stay tuned for that. Jack Harvey and Meyer Shank Racing did announce a 10-race deal. The only oval on that would be the Indianapolis 500, otherwise 9 road courses for Harvey, which is up from 6 total races that he did last year. So that's definitely good news and good to see them continually growing. Mike, do you remember when we had Matthew Grunholtz on fan night?
I do.
Do you remember the driver's name that you butchered really badly?
I know what is next because I'm looking at the rundown and I'm not even going to go there.
Jess, do you remember?
No, but I can pull it up. Hold on.
No, it's the first name is Rico.
Oh, Abreu.
There you go. Rico Abreu, as Mike said, Abreu, I think.
Yeah, it was close.
Abreu, yeah.
It was the Chili Bowl last weekend, and he was on the record as saying that he would love to run the Indianapolis 500 day one day with Chip Ganassi, which I think would be partway excellent. And I guess we can dive into any thoughts we have on these first three topics. I'll share my thoughts on Rico. I think it'd be part excellent and part underwhelming. And what I say by that is dirt racing drivers are some of the most talented racing drivers in the world. However, in recent memory, I don't think we've seen that success translate to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in an open wheel car. I'm thinking Brian Clausen, who didn't have the best equipment to his defense, but he seemed to kind of linger towards the back in some of his races. You know, Chris Windham last year was unfortunately in a crash leading up to the Freedom 100 and couldn't race. Davey Hamilton Jr. in a less than stellar Indy Lights car was nowhere last year, the Freedom 100. I don't know if I'm missing a couple examples, but I'd love to see him try it, and Chip Ganassi would definitely be good equipment. And I think he's super talented. I just don't know if he's going to get up to speed quick enough to compete with the guys. And if there is bumping, you know, there's not a guaranteed entry. Mike, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, it's I'm not going to say his name, so I don't continue to butcher it. but yeah, I think it's awesome that, you know, more of these sprint car guys want to get into, you know, the Indy 500, even if it's what they should do. And I think even Robin Miller has said this, so I might be stealing his ideas. You know, if you win X number of sprint car races, or if you win the Chili Bowl, you should get, you know, an Indy 500, you know, some funding towards the Indy 500 or something. That would be cool. Just an idea there. But in terms of Rico, you know, he's a hell of a racer. And I think it's cool that he wants to run in the 500. I was a little surprised he said, oh, I want to run it with Ganassi. Kind of like, why would you want to limit yourself? I know Chip's got good equipment, but if you can get an Indy 500 entry as a non, you know, full-time IndyCar driver, I think you should, you know, jump at it, especially for the first time you get in there.
Jess?
Okay, so he said he wanted to run with Ganassi, excuse me, because he wants to run it with Kyle Larson as a teammate.
Okay.
They're really good friends, and they've raced together their whole lives, so that's why he said Ganassi. I would be willing to guess that if somebody threw him an offer, he probably wouldn't say no. That's just a guess, though. But then as far as your idea that you stole from Robin Miller was actually stolen from a program that used to happen. This was, let's see, I know it happened in 2006, 2005, 6, and 7, maybe. The winner of the Knoxville Nationals race in Knoxville, Iowa, did actually get funding that would translate into a ride in what was then, let's see, what was it then? Not Indy Lights. What was
wasn't it Indy Pro Series?
Yes. No, Infinite. Was it
Infinity Pro Series?
Indy Pro Series or Infinity Pro Series, whatever it was at that point in time. But so they did actually used to have a program that did feed dirt drivers into IndyCar. So that it was good, but there were a lot of tweaks that needed to be done to that idea. So I think that maybe that's not the best idea or best way to go about it. I think it just needed some tweaks. The program needed some tweaks. So if they could figure out all the logistics and how to make it work to get the guys some seat time, because that was a lot of the problem is, you know, they were coming off dirt and trying to drive pavement cars. And it just, they needed some more seat time. So if they can figure out all the logistics of that, I think it's a great idea. But otherwise, you know, kind of the more traditional routes, I still think work better.
Yeah, I think, wasn't it Randy Bernard's idea? Because he's the one that kind of brought Brian Clausen to the road to Indy.
I think you're right.
And then eventually IndyCar. And then I'm sure Robin Miller wrote a 34-page article about how great Randy Bernard was for that. But yeah, that's I wouldn't mind seeing it, you know, personally. The more avenues to IndyCar for some of the guys who maybe don't get enough credit in the racing world, the better. I'm still just going to be on the fence to say I don't think they'll have enough time to get up to speed because it's just a different animal. The downforce levels and whatnot, it's not probably what they're accustomed to. So we'll see, though. More news. Pascal Wehrlein is still hoping to be in the IndyCar in some capacity in 2019. My personal prediction is it seems like a good place for him to land up is Carlin, since they do have a couple races open since Kimball is not full-time. Verlaine is the Mercedes test driver, or was at some point, and then the last we saw him in the F1 scene was in 2017. Mike's favorite driver, Agustin Canapino, did Instagram a picture of himself with a seat fitting at Yumkos in the IndyCar, adding fuel to the speculation that he's going to be on the grid in some capacity in IndyCar in 2019. Thankfully, the bar has been set very low for him because Rene Binder was in the series last year, so nowhere to go but up for him. Robin Miller had his Miller mailbag today and teased us fans that Connor Daly is going to have the best ride that he's ever had at Indy this month of May, which I think is great news. But me being that guy, I also took a step back and realized that Connor Daly has driven at Indy in Schmidt's road course third car, Dale Coyne, and Foyt. So I don't think it's really anywhere to go but up for Daly. But it definitely has us all excited. So I don't know, Mike, if you have a prediction as to who this mystery entry he will be driving for is.
I'm going to take a shot in the dark here and say Ganassi is going to enter a third car in the 500, and it will be Robin Daly. Connor
Daly. Wow.
I'm really sorry, Connor.
Robin has adopted Connor Daly. Jess.
Well, he kind of stole mine, so I don't know. Maybe it's tough. Maybe Andretti will add car number 93 to their lineup. I really have no idea because I really wanted to go with Ganassi. You stole mine.
Well, it makes sense if it was Andretti just because Stefan Wilson, shout out if you're listening, Steph. I don't know if he's announced his plans quite yet or if he has plans coming. I haven't seen. He's been pretty quiet because he was in that, I don't know, how many entries did Ganassi run last year? Like eight? Ganassi. Andretti.
93.
Yeah, so if it kind of makes sense if Connor would go to Andretti. But there's also this mysterious third Foyt entry that's, you know, making the rounds out there. I think it was Tony Donahue who tweeted that there may be a third Foyt entry that's going to be announced. And I would say that Foyt has come miles as far as when Daly was last with them, which was 2017,
the full year.
Right. No, but his first Indy 500 was 2017.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yep.
And I guess 2017 too, because actually, you know, Laced actually had a pretty underrated Indy 500 last year. He was solidly in the top 15, 16, pretty much the entire race. And Kanaan, I think, had the best car in the field, if I'm being honest. Was running high, flat tire, came back and charged through the field again, then just, you know, wrecked it kind of like a clown. But, you know, if he ends up at that third Foyt car, I don't think that's anything to turn your nose up at. It's not the best team ever, but, you know, it's definitely better than Coyne's fifth car they found randomly in a dumpster somewhere. So we'll keep an eye on that. And I guess that's something to look forward to, is kind of seeing where Connor Daly ends up. But it's good to hear that there's positive news surrounding his future. So that's good. One sad story to report is that Lone Star JR, Johnny Rutherford, his wife did pass away, Betty Rutherford. Sad news to report. I didn't know this, but they actually met at the Speedway. I think Betty was in the ticketing area or worked outside the care center or something along those lines. And they met, and, you know, the rest was history. So thinking of the Rutherford family and everybody close with Betty, very sad news to report out of that. Positive news. Mike, do we have any sponsor shout outs we got to do?
Yeah, real quick before we get there, a cool story about Betty Rutherford. She, from what I read, IndyCar's PR, Pat Caporelli tweeted that, or retweeted somebody saying that she was, Betty was actually the first woman on pit lane in any capacity before there were female engineers or PR people or pit reporters or anything. She hung out on pit lane one race, and there were a lot of people who weren't very happy, but she stood firm. So, you know, that's a pretty cool story I had never heard about before. Sponsor shout outs. So thank you again to IndieFilly.com. It's IndieFilly.com. You can listen to the show there on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. if you're near your computer, or obviously on all the podcast apps. And that's it for the pitfalls.
And I also forgot to mention, not that Mike needs credit or bragging rights or anything, did win the poll last week of if Argentina was going to host an IndyCar race. He said 10%, and that was the highest voted response on social media. So thanks to those who followed us on Twitter at Pit Lane Parlay, P-A-R-L-E-Y, and voted for the wrong answer, but we do appreciate you for voicing your guys' opinions on that one. But yeah, we can move into pitfalls so I can cut Mike off before he starts bragging. Mine is a attaboy to a guy who pitfalled two people who I don't really care for, and that's former F1 driver Eddie Irvine, who came out today and said, first of all, that Lewis Hamilton is the best driver on the grid at the moment, which I would agree with now that Alonso's gone. But he also said that he's not even close to being on the same level as Michael Schumacher, even though he's getting close to Schumacher in wins and championships, which I agree with. And I think that, you know, had Schumacher had 21 races a year, that his stats would also be insanely good. The second part, though, which was definitely the better part, was his choice words for Sebastian Vettel. He said, quote, "I think Vettel is a good driver, but as a 4-times world championship or champion, I just don't see it. I think he is massively overrated. He's a one-trick pony, and Lewis is a much broader talent. Vettel, when he is racing someone, is focused as much on the other guy as he is on where he is going, and inevitably crashes into the other guy, which happens nearly all the time," which is something I pointed out to people a couple times last year, is when he gets into adversity, I feel like Vettel just starts making dumb decisions or forcing Verstappen off the track and cutting a tire or making contact with somebody. And he just doesn't seem like, if he's in clean air or if he's not starting first through third, that he's in trouble. So it's good and refreshing to hear someone like Eddie Irvine, who definitely has been around the scene for quite some time, to kind of hear those comments. So I'll give an attaboy to Eddie Irvine this week.
Yeah, I'll say one quick thing on that, and then I'll let Jess go next. I can't really disagree with him, and when you look at it, Vettel kind of does panic, as you saw at the end of last year, and he crashed into Verstappen or whoever that was, or when he overshot that corner trying to come back there. So I'll leave it at that, and I'll let Jess go next.
Oh, and one more thing. I forgot to mention that Vettel also supremely sucked at the Race of Champions, which everybody's in the same car, so maybe that's just if you're not in the second best car on the grid, what can you do? Sorry, Jess, go ahead.
No, you're fine. I think my only comment on that is I would want to see Hamilton race some other things before I say that he is that much better and that he's not a one-trick pony, for lack of a better word. But I do agree that he has more talent. So moving on, my pitfall's kind of weird. So mine is obviously related to Dale Earnhardt Jr. with the question earlier. You kind of gathered that. So we found out in my Sempa host question that Dale Jr. has won approximately 4% of the races that he entered in the Cup Series. Again, this is only in the Cup Series. I didn't go through and do all of the math for all of the other things that he's ever raced. So he could have done much better in some of the other things, and I just overlooked it. But he is being inducted this year, I think it said during the month of May, into the North Carolina Sports Hall of Fame. You know, I don't recall how many people the article said were being inducted this year, but he's one of 13 former race drivers who have been inducted. My only thing is I feel like with only winning 4% of his races, there's got to be a better person to induct. I don't know, obviously I'm not from North Carolina, so I don't know all of the sports figures from North Carolina specifically, but I just feel like his stats aren't good enough to be Hall of Fame. I feel like he's only getting Hall of Fame because of his name, and I just don't agree with that kind of, I guess, putting people on a pedestal for their name thing.
Yeah, I can't argue that. 4% seems pretty low to me. I'm no expert in math, but I don't know. Maybe there's not too many athletes from North Carolina.
Maybe not. And like I said, I didn't do all the background, and I could be completely wrong on this. I'm just, from that point of view, I just feel like there would have to be a better candidate.
It's totally fair. I guess I'm up last here. So going back to F1 tweeted, or I'm sorry, Facebook posted a calling all Indiana F1 fans. First off, bad start. we're looking for passionate F1 devotees who are from the heart of IndyCar racing. People we can interview for a video piece about why a Hoosier would prefer F1. Again, I don't know. What is about the experience that they enjoy? Interested, email, blah, blah, blah. A guy they asked you to email is a film director of sorts. So I don't even really know where to start on this, but first off, let's see here. F1 trying to go at the heart of IndyCar seems like a bad idea, just from like they're just kind of trying to poke a knife in IndyCar's back and see what they can do with this. Second, they could have picked any other place, the East Coast, the West Coast, where maybe fans aren't as hardcore IndyCar. Third, they got such negative comments about it on all social media, they deleted it within about, I think, 5 hours, 5 or 6 hours. It wasn't a long time. So just I think it shows that it was a terrible move on F1's part, and I'm really glad that they were forced to delete it with all of the comments, pretty much laughing. The IndyCar social media was a fun place to read all the comments for, you know, the hours that it was up, and really, 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 really bad move on F1's part.
I just don't know what they were trying to accomplish. Yeah. Nowadays on the internet, people will take any chance they get to troll companies like that.
Yeah.
And for them to say, hey, IndyCar fans, what do you like about Formula One? It's like, nothing, because our racing is entertaining and you guys suck. I mean, that's kind of the response they got from a majority of people. So yeah, it was good to see IndyCar fans collectively get together to troll the Formula One Facebook post. That yes. was a good time.
And thank you to Colin Taylor for pointing out that the guy they were asking everybody to email was a filmmaker. Colin was the one who pointed that out to us when we tweeted about it.
Jess, I'm sure you have thoughts on this.
Oh man, where do you even start? I do have several thoughts. There are several words I would like to say that we're not allowed to say. I'm just going to, let me just, like, yeah, first of all, the poor person whose email address was in this Facebook post, I feel real, real bad for him, because I can only imagine how it blew up his email, let alone the, you know, the social media aspect of things. But he, you know, he had his poor email address out there, and he's probably deleted his email account at this point. But I mean, yeah, the only, I guess, positive comment that I saw, and mind you, I am not on Facebook, so I'm getting this all from Twitter, where people have retweeted the picture and, you know, they're asking for comments or whatever. The only semi-positive comment, or I guess more of a question, is, so are they feeling threatened, or are they thinking about coming back to Indiana? Because either way, this is not the way to go about it. You know, if they were thinking about coming back to Indiana, maybe make the post like, hey guys, we know we were in Indiana before. Do you miss us and why? Not, let's talk about why you like this more than IndyCar. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
It's like a high school type post.
It really is. It's very, I don't know, childish, and just in really poor taste, in my opinion.
Yeah, very well said.
I thought you called it facey spacey.
Facey Spacey, that is correct.
It is Facey Spacey, but not everybody knows what Facey Spacey is.
So on that note, we will wrap things up here. We're just a little over the hour mark. Thank you again, everybody listening. We'll have our regular scheduled episode up next Friday as well. Getting close to season preview time. And with that, I think it's time for Jess to sign it off.
And guys, keep your lug nuts tight.
The music for this week's episode was done by Impulse Studios and produced by Podcastly Productions. Web design courtesy of A30.com.